at 99.5 FM WBAI. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And, boy, do I got a load of stuff for you today. Lots of material, but I need you to understand something. Today I want to talk about worrying, why people worry. Now, there are a lot of people out there who worry all the time. They just worry, 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 and they're always caught in their minds between one worry and another worry. And I used to rationalize this. I said the following. As we were developing as a species, we needed different kinds of humans. We needed the alpha human, the one that was going to go out there and be in charge. You always need somebody in charge. And you need one person who's in charge. Then you need soldiers of some sort, people who are going to go out, men or women, male or female, who are going to go out and go get, you know, the food and bring it back. And then you need other people who are going to be workers, either people who are going to process the food or do the grain or make the home, you know, and make it nice and pleasant like that, male or female. But that's not enough. You also need some people who are going to defend you, protect you. Now, these, of course, could be the warriors, but the warriors are out there going to get food. So you need another group of people who may not be powerful enough to be warriors, and they are the worriers. Isn't that funny? Just a little bowel movement. You go from A to O. The warriors become worriers. Yes, the warriors become worriers, and the worriers are the people who are looking around the perimeter for danger. So they're the nervous ones. They're on the outskirts. See, and they're checking. So just imagine a bunch of chimps up in a tree, and there's the big chimp downstairs having a party, you know, doing whatever he wants. And there are other chimps around him who are doing the work, going out, getting food, bringing it back. And there are the other chimps who are, like, you know, being nice to the big chimp. And then there are the guys on the outskirts. And they're watching, because if somebody else comes along who might threaten them, he's the one who alerts everybody. This is the professional worrier. It's an attitude that you see a lot of people have. They worry about everything. Their mind is filled as if their job is to worry and spot where the difficulty is. They worry about. These are the people who have all their insurances paid up. They have everything up there. They're worried. They make sure there are no dangers. So it's a question. Do you think it was just a choice of nature that you become a warrior and somebody else becomes the leader and somebody else becomes the warrior and somebody else becomes the make-the-home person? I don't think so. I used to think this was my rationalization in my mind. So I would meet people who were warriors and I would say, well, remember, we needed you back then. And you're still in that position now. You're kind of protecting. But as I examine this and as I look deeper into the people who are worriers, the thing I find is that they're mostly worried not about other people but about themselves. And their greatest fear is abandonment. Their greatest fear is a loss of love. Rejection. And now you can boil almost everything down to the fear of rejection and abandonment. And those of you who are worriers know what I'm talking about. And those of you who know worriers are going to be able to make sense of this today as I stay with you and I bring you this information. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. good stuff coming up. First, I want to talk to you about the research of a man named Bertrand Young. He believed, he did a thing about maladaptive schemas, he called them. S-C-H-E-M-A-S. Maladaptive schemas. These are unconditional beliefs and feelings about yourself in relationship to the environment. These are implicit. You take them for granted. I am this person. I am a kind person. I am a religious person. I am a nonviolent person. I am a good person. I am a strong person. The schema, once it's activated, now this anywhere in infancy, this gets developed. The individuals believe that they can at best delay or hide the inevitable bad outcome, such as rejection or punishment, but you develop a schema to avoid rejection, abandonment, or punishment as a child. Now, this is very interesting because there are certain people who are, you know, give an example, the warriors. They usually have a kind of an overpresent mother, and they try, the scheme they develop is, I'm going to get close to daddy. See, I'll get close to daddy because he's going to be able to be a buffer between mommy and me. And then that doesn't work. But the scheme is, I got to find a daddy to protect me against a mommy. You know, and that's, gee, how could you live like that? You can. Now, according to Young, you got to get this because this is really brilliant stuff that he did. The maladaptive scheme is a self-perpetuating, that means the things that we believe, and I'm going to tell you the different ways that people believe things. They're self-perpetuating. They're very resistant to change. If you believe, my job is to protect everybody and to make sure there is no danger. My job is to keep everything under control. My job is to... You believe this about yourself. It won't change because they're developed early in life and they form the core of an individual's self-concept and conception of the environment. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We are a psychology class on the air, in effect. The idea here is not to give you just foolish psychology that you could use on somebody. The idea here is to give you understanding of yourself first and other people as well. So when you see somebody, a worrier, it's very easy to tell them, don't worry. But if you understand the basis of the worry, the fear of abandonment, rejection, the fear of vulnerability, and you understand it and you begin to spot it, you can be with it in a different kind of way. Now, keep in mind, when I'm going to talk about these early adaptive schemers, the maladaptive schemers, they usually start in the worst place in childhood, wherever the worst energy was in childhood, and they're perpetual. And they become more and more activated according to the pressure that you're under at any given moment. So, for example, you may have a schema of controlling everything. That may be your scheme. I'm going to control. Well, you could let go and you could let loose, but as soon as you and somebody you love have some kind of a battle, you go back to your controlling, maladaptive schema. I'm going to read you the schemas so that you don't, so that you know what I'm talking about. That's right. I'm going to tell you the different ways that people do it. And two of them we're going to really go with. Let's talk. These are called life traps. These are the traps of life. Now, remember, the life traps relate to a lack of safety or security in your childhood family. The biggest ones are abandonment and mistrust. Abandonment. The abandonment life trap is the feeling that the people you love will leave you and you will end up isolated emotionally forever. Whether you feel people close to you will die, leave home forever, or abandon you because they prefer someone else, somehow you feel that you will be left alone. Now, one little take on this, one little offshoot of this, is the fear of abandonment could be the fear of abandonment of your buffer with somebody who is even more toxic in the family. For example, if you had a father who was a really miserable creep, who beat you, abused you, did all kinds of stuff like that. Not that all fathers do that, but some are creeps. And you have that. You have a fear of your mother's death. Why are you afraid of your mother's death so much? Well, it's a terror, because you'd be abandoned by your mother and left alone with your father. Hey, isn't this fun? Isn't this what you want to do at your lunch hour, listen to stuff like this? Well, those of you who are still on the air, I'll give you good music, you know. It takes just about 30 minutes of teaching, and then we get to the good stuff. But imagine me in a college class. I used to teach college. I used to love to teach this stuff to people because it was so much fun. Now, ironically, because of this belief, you cling to people close to you too much. And you end up pushing them away because you cling to them too much. Then they kind of shove you away. And then you get upset or angry about even normal separations, like, I'll be home late. Why? I'm surprised you don't want to be there. How come you don't want to be there? Stuff like that, you know. Mistrust and abuse. The second of the 11 life traps. Here's another life trap. You see, the first life trap is to fear abandonment. That's it. If you're going to live fearing abandonment, forget it. You're kind of parked somewhere, because there is no such thing as abandonment, really. What if I leave you? What if I decide not to do radio anymore? God, that would be a terrible thing. But imagine that. Would you be abandoned by me? No, of course not. You turn on somebody else. You'd put on another station. You'd find someone else. If you love someone and they die, are you abandoned? No, they died. But the feeling of abandonment is this desolate feeling that a child could have that's associated with the terror of survival. There's no survival. Well, it's not true. Of course there is. But to live with the fear of abandonment is one of the biggest life traps. Then there's mistrust and abuse. The mistrust and abuse life trap is the expectation that people will hurt or abuse you in some way, that they will cheat, lie to, manipulate, humiliate, physically harm, or otherwise take advantage of you. If you have this life trap, you hide behind a wall of mistrust to protect yourself. An extension of this life trap, of course, is paranoia. You never let people get too close. You're suspicious of the other people's intentions, and you tend to assume the worst. You expect that the people you love will betray you. Either you avoid relationships altogether, form superficial relationships in which you do not really open up to people, or if you form relationships with people who treat you badly, and then you feel angry and vengeful towards them, and you push them away. You pick the wrong person over and over again. Now, those are some of the life traps. Now, here's two other life traps that relate to your ability to function independently in a world. And these life traps are dependence and vulnerability. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're on with you Tuesdays and Wednesdays of most weeks. Next week, we won't be with you on Wednesday. We'll be with you only on Tuesday. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM. But you can always go to the website, thepositivemind.com, where you can get access to all of the archives at no charge. We don't sell anything. And there'll be no commercials popping up. All you got to do is listen to the programs, as people do, as my two friends in Florida probably are doing right now. And there's so many other fine people. I know a couple of other people, Angela and Benji, are listening, and some new people as well. Okay, now let's talk about these life traps that affect your function, your ability to function independently in the world. Dependency. Dependency is such a life trap. If you're caught in the dependency life trap, you feel unable to handle everyday life in a competent manner without considerable help from others. So they call this the dependent personality syndrome. You depend on others to act as a crutch, and you need constant support. As a child, you were made to feel incompetent when you tried to assert your independence. As an adult, you seek out strong figures upon whom to become dependent and allow them to rule your life. At work, you shrink away from acting on your own. Needless to say, this holds you back. You know, that's a follower, not a leader. And dependency means you don't want to make any decisions on your own at all. So that's a real life trap, and you can understand why. Every time you made a decision in early childhood, you were bonked over the head. Then there's vulnerability. With vulnerability, which is another life trap, so if you look at somebody and they look extraordinarily vulnerable, you just say, all right, here's one of those strategies. Because that's all it is. The paranoid person, it's a strategy. You know, the person with fear, the person who's isolated, these are strategies. This is what they're trying, this is how they're trying to get by. With vulnerability, you live in fear that disaster is about to strike, whether natural, criminal, medical, or financial. You do not feel safe in the world. If you have this life trap, as a child, you were made to feel that the world is a dangerous place. You were probably overprotected by your parents, who worried too much about your safety. Your fears are excessive and unrealistic. Yet you let them control your life, and you pour your energy into making sure that you are safe. Your fears may revolve around illness, such as having an anxiety attack, getting AIDS, going crazy, having infections. You may be focused around financial vulnerability, going broke and ending up on the streets. Your vulnerability may revolve around other phobic situations, such as fear of flying, being mugged, earthquakes. All phobias fall into this category of the vulnerability maladaptive schema. So two other life traps. We're talking about different life traps. Two other life traps relate to the strength of your emotional connections to others. And this relates to how you relate to other people. And then later we're going to go on and talk about worry, particularly. Deprivation. Emotional deprivation. Here's another life trap. These are positions that you take as a child, and you believe they're going to work for you, and you believe you're going to get by better if you allow yourself to look this way, behave this way, and act this way. You believe somehow that whatever love is in this world, you're going to get it more this way. Vulnerability, deprivation. Emotional deprivation is a belief that your need for love will never be met adequately by another person. You feel that no one really cares for you or understands how you feel. You find yourself attracted to cold and ungiving people. Or you're cold and ungiving yourself, leading you to form relationships that inevitably prove unsatisfying. Now, this is very interesting because this emotional deprivation or lack of emotion becomes a very important ingredient in your life. Either you don't have it or the other person doesn't have it. Now, if you come along somebody who's a really cold fish, you know, they're very attractive. You got the emotional deprivation. There's no chance you're going to feel much. Or if you're the cold fish, you know, you kind of ward them off. It reminded me of that Charles Dickens story. What was that one where the gentleman was trying to melt the heart? I forget. So you feel cheated in life. You alternate between being angry about it and feeling hurt and alone. You talk about it to your therapist. She. And if you got a good therapist, they say, what about you, you, and I? You know, how about those words? You feel cheated. You feel hurt. You feel alone. And ironically, your anger just drives people further away, which ensures your continued deprivation. So romantics, deep people who are really isolated, you know, they kind of drive people away because they get angry at the people they choose for being the way they are. And here's another strategy called social exclusion. The social exclusion strategy involves your connection to friends and groups. It has to do with feeling isolated from the rest of the world and with feeling different. If you have this life trap, as a child, you felt excluded by peers. You didn't belong to a group of friends. Perhaps you had some unusual characteristic that made you feel different in some way. Maybe you look different. Maybe you smell different. Maybe you talk different. As an adult, you maintain your life trap mainly through avoidance. You avoid socialization in groups and making friends. You may have felt excluded because there was something about you that other children rejected. Hence, you felt socially undesirable. As an adult, you may feel that you're ugly, sexually undesirable, low in status, poor in conversational skills, boring, or otherwise deficient. You reenact your childhood rejection. You feel and act inferior in a social situation. Now, it's not always apparent that someone has a social exclusion life trap, because many people with this life trap are quite comfortable in intimate settings and are quite socially skilled. Their life trap may not even show in a one-to-one relationship. It surprises us to realize how anxious and aloof they may feel. They have a restless quality, a quality of looking for a place to belong. Now, two other life traps, which both are belief systems, have to do with your self-esteem. All gets related to what we're going to be talking about later. Number one is defectiveness. With defectiveness, you feel inwardly flawed and defective. You believe that you would be fundamentally unlovable to anybody who got close enough to you to really know you. Now, one manifestation of this is the perfectionist. The perfectionist is the person who's always finding the imperfect in other people and always trying to focus on the imperfect. They can't help it. You know, I remember one man who told me I went out with this beautiful person. She was great, but she had a mole on the back of her shoulder, and I couldn't focus on anything but the mole on the back of her shoulder. This was his thing. But of course, the real issue is he felt there was something defective about him. Whenever you meet a perfectionist, especially if they're a preacher or if they're on a pulpit or if they're telling you how great they are all the time, if they sell something and you hear them talking about, oh, I do this and I do that and I give and I'm wonderful and I'm fine, and they're so trying to correct people and help people live a better life and make them look better and make them think better and make them do all the other stuff better, and they're going to help you perfect your life. Whenever you meet these kind of people, you know inwardly they believe that they're flawed. And you know they usually don't have any real good personal relationships. A lot of people fear them, but they're flawed. Flawed, and you can't see it. Because they look like they're the top of the world. They look like they have all the answers. They are the teachers. As a child, this kind of person didn't feel respected who they were in the family. They were criticized for their flaws. They blamed themselves. They felt unworthy of love. So as an adult, they're afraid to love. They find it difficult to believe that people close to them value them. So they expect rejection. And then they put out this mask of perfection. I am great. Look at how many people love me. Look at how many things I've written. Look at how big I am. Look at how wonderful I am. I'm a wonderful, wonderful human being. I could imagine myself doing that. I could imagine some period in my life where I actually kind of felt that as an avoidance of my own imperfections. I'm sure many of you can. All right, so these strategies, and we're just going to go on for a couple more years, hopefully get through them. Yes, we are going to get through them all before the break. Failure. This is another way that people are. One of the life strategies is to constantly fail. Failure is the belief that you're inadequate in areas of achievement such as school, work, and sports. You believe you're a dumbo. You believe you can't make it. You believe you failed relative to your peers. As a child, you were made to feel inferior in terms of achievement. Now, this has a lot to do with siblings, too, when a parent compares you to the others, you know? You may have had a learning disability. You may never have learned enough discipline to master important skills such as reading. You may have, for some reason or another, had a drifting artistic mind. Other children were always better than you. You were called stupid, untalented, or here is the worst of all words to make you feel inadequate, you're called lazy. Why they say that word is because they say you are wrong for not trying harder. And I'll tell you, anyone who's ever been called lazy feels like killing themselves because they try so, so hard. And then they believe the reason they can't do it is because there's something wrong with their will. It makes me sad to think of the people who go through that. As an adult, you maintain your life trap by exaggerating the degree of your failure and by acting in ways that ensured your continued failure. So this is the recidivist, the recidivist. You know, the person who gets arrested more than once. The person who winds up, you know, having trouble, getting fired from job after job. You just keep it going and you keep it going and you keep it going. It's the only way you play safe. Lastly, of all the life traps, there's subjugation. With subjugation, you sacrifice your own needs and desires for the sake of pleasing others or meeting their needs. You become the caregiver, as we were talking about yesterday, the giver. I will take care of you, and here's the deal. If I give you enough stuff, you will love me. That's the deal, supposedly, right? But of course, they never do love you back because you take care of them. And then you get angry because they don't love you. But that continues your belief. And what you do is you turn your whole personality over. Why shouldn't you? You don't like your personality anyway. So you turn it over, and you turn it over to let others control you completely. You do this either out of guilt, that you could hurt other people by putting yourself first. They call you, you have this word in your mind that's this horrible word, selfish. Oh, he's a selfish person, it's a bad thing. Or you do it out of guilt. And then, or you fear that you'll be punished or abandoned if you disobey. So what you do is you set up a relationship with somebody who is a rejecting person, usually nice, a cold fish is very good for this. You serve them as best they could, as best you can, thinking that they may, you know, fearing their rejection, fearing that they're going to push you away. And when they push you away, it kind of turns you on. It kind of makes you want to subjugate even more. And you stay after it, and you stay after it, and you stay after it. As a child, someone close to you, probably a parent, did this with you. They subjugated you. As an adult, you repeatedly enter relationships that have a similar kind of ring to them. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Which of these strategies did you want? Did you adapt? There's one more. We're going to be able to get this in today. Unrelenting standards. If you're an unrelenting standards life trap, this is a little like the perfectionist we described. You strive relentlessly to meet extremely high expectations of yourself. You put excessive emphasis on status, money, achievement, beauty. You probably apply your rigid standards to others as well as yourself. And when you were a child, you were expected to be the best. And you were taught that nothing else, that anything else is a failure. You learned that nothing you did was quite good enough. Lastly, the biggest of all, not the biggest, but one of the biggest of all life traps is entitlement. Entitlement is the final life trap, entitlement. It's associated with people's ability to accept realistic limits in life. People who have this life trap feel special. I am special. You are special. Special, special, special is a big word to them. I'm not. I'm ordinary. It's kind of, I got a, but I used to want to be special. They insist that they be able to do, say, or have whatever they want immediately. They disregard what others consider reasonable, what is acting feasibly, the time of patience usually required. They disregard the cost to others. If I want it, I'm entitled to it. I remember once seeing somebody who was selling something on the phone that was useless to people, and he said, "They have my money." They have difficulty with self-discipline. Many of the people with this life trap were spoiled as children. They're not required to show self-control or to accept the restrictions placed on them but others. As adults, they still get very angry when they do not get what they want. Those are the life traps, my friend. And finally, of course, the biggest life trap is running out of time, as we always do. And here we are. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'll play you some music about worrying. It's such an interesting collection of voices. And then we will continue and we'll talk about fear and worry. We'll be right back.
You work, you save, you worry so much. You can't take your dough when you go, go, go. So keep repeating it's the berries. The strongest oak must fall.
But Lee, wop biddy, wop a bit of love. Wow.
Life is just a bowl of cherries. So live and laugh at it all.
Life is just a bowl of cherries. Don't make it serious. Life's too mysterious. You work, you save, you worry so, but you can't take your dough when you go. So keep repeating, it's the berries, for the strongest oak must fall. The sweet things in life to you were just loans, so how can you lose what you've never owned? Life is just a bowl of cherries, so live and laugh at a moment.
Life is just a bowl of cherries, don't be so serious, life's too mysterious. You work, you say, and you worry so, but you can't take that good dough when you go. Keep on repeating, it's the berries, and the strongest oak must fall. The sweet things in life to you were just loans, so how you gonna lose what you've never owned? Life is just a bowl of cherries, so live and laugh at it all.
Life is just a bowl of cherries, don't make it serious, life's too mysterious. You work, you save, you worry so, but you can't take your dough where you go. So keep on repeating, honey, everything's a berry, so strong as oak must fall. The sweet things in life to you were just loans, so how can you lose what you've never owned?
Life is just a bowl of cherries,
so live and laugh at it all, just so you're happy. Live, smile, laugh at it all.
You might not have recognized that. The Boswell Sisters and Bing Crosby. Yeah, where do we get this stuff from? Life is just a bowl of cherries. Then why are we worried so much? Well, what stirred this all off for me was I got a piece of research the other day which challenged one of my beliefs, as my beliefs are always getting challenged. And one of the beliefs that I had was that worry was appropriate for certain people. But what it turned out was the following. The latest neurological work proved or said or suggests that those who worry lose their ability to effectively solve problems. That you would think that the more you look, the more you'll see. But according to what happens in the brain neurologically, it seems that you burn out certain receptors of perception. And that by worrying all the time, you are more likely to have problems. Well, I mean, I couldn't believe it. And I was looking into this. This is in Scientific American Today or something. And so one would imagine, you know, the more I worry about a fire, of course I won't have as many fires because I'll be putting out the candles. But the trouble is, the more you worry about it, in effect, the more your mind becomes immune to seeing it. So you become so sure to put out the fire there and put out the fire there and put out the fire there that you don't become sensitive to one of the things that let you know potential fire, which is smell. Since you never smell the fire because you're always putting out the fire before it starts. So one of the things we're saying about worry is it is not only not productive but destructive. Now that's... Does that mean that worry has to be treated? Well, of course, that's one of the things they do. What they do and what they created for you, they took worry, and when it's extreme worry, we now call it obsessive compulsive. Obsessive compulsive means you think about it all the time. Compulsive means you do something about it. Obsessive compulsive is locking a door. Obsessive compulsive is staying away from people. Obsessive compulsive is one of the things that we can now diagnose, and by calling it that, we now have a drug for you. And so they invented a drug. They discovered that if you give this person serotonin, the more serotonin they have, the less they worry. That makes sense. Serotonin is one of those things that tell you relax. It's like opium. It says, yeah, the more you got serotonin, you're going to relax a little bit. You're not going to be as worried. You lose serotonin, you get very worried. A woman goes through a menstrual cycle, she loses serotonin. She gets irritable. Some. She looks to pick up her serotonin. She has a whole bunch of ways of picking it up. One is through different foods that she could digest, or she goes through it. But, you know, another way to pick up your serotonin is go to a nail salon, carry on communication with people, talk on the phone for 2 hours. It all increases serotonin. But worrying, in effect, will decrease the serotonin level. And in a way, what we want to do is be able to kind of do away with it if possible. It's not a functional thing. So worry is a waste of time. Worry changes nothing. We don't accomplish anything, and we find answers to our questions by worrying. We also cannot add anything to our life by worrying. Worry can only subtract from our lives. It causes stress, infirmities, ulcers, and coronary thrombosis. So when they invented this drug, they said, we'll give you more serotonin. We're not going to give you more. We're just going to stop it from leaving you. They call these SSRIs, Prozac, and things like that. And now the world, I would say we got about a good, maybe 5% of our population is on this. But if you live in a city, you're probably going to find a higher percentage among the young people, because what's the other answer? Therapy, finding somebody to talk to, it's too expensive. You know, it's just too expensive. Go through your insurance plans. They tell you, go get drugs. Go get the medications. We don't want to pay for therapy anymore. Therapy's good because, you know, you talk to somebody and you find out about yourself and you learn to challenge these things in yourself. It's much more effective. But drugs are cheap. You know, drugs are... So people get balanced out through medications. And, of course, you could find other ways that you could attempt to do it through meditations as well as running, as well as, you know, whole food and all that other stuff, and try to make it work for yourself. But medication is the way that the world deals with obsessive compulsive stuff. But it's a waste of time. Worry is just muddling away today's time to clutter up tomorrow's opportunities with yesterday's troubles. Worry's unnecessary. It can't erase the mistakes of the past. Now, there's one form of worry that's just absolutely amazing: regrets. This is the sign of a real depressed person. Regrets about the past. I shoulda. I coulda. Apple at $5 a share. Hey, I could've. You know, I could've. I should've. I would've. I'm regrets. Regrets, one form going backwards. Worry is going forward. So there's two signs of psychological disturbance: regretting and worrying. One is you're living in the past. The other is you're living in the future. Now let's think about this as a hypothesis. It may not be true, but I'm kind of making this up. You know, our body is built on a 24-hour cycle. We humans were given bodies that have to recycle every 24 hours. Every 24 hours, you go to sleep, you lay down, you regenerate, you wake up, you do things, you got a 24-hour cycle. So kind of you're in the present, ideally, for 24 of those hours. This is why it doesn't make sense to spend your time in the past or in the future, because you're not taking advantage of the 24 hours that you're allotted. It almost makes sense. It almost makes sense. I'm sure one of you are going to help me make more sense of it. But worry contradicts common sense. We got to learn to this one day, if you want to live a fruitful, long life, live by a biological clock. First, be sure to be living today. Worry is illogical. Worry is illogical because it's futile, it's unproductive, and it's pointless. It's faith in the negative, trust in the unpleasant, assurance of disaster. It's a belief in defeat. We don't know what tomorrow may bring, but there's no point in worrying about it. We look ahead and worry about things that have not yet happened. And they may just never happen anyway. Concern is different than worry. You see, caution. Those are all different than worry. Worry creates a problem. If you're focused on our fears, we're more likely to crash into them. Tinkering about them, thinking about them, is a confirmation that the existence of making them exist, even if they aren't really there. If you worry about something, you create an image of it. And once you create an image of it, it now becomes live. It now becomes, I mean, I remember, do any of you have this? When I was a kid, I used to fear that there was somebody hiding in the closet. And that they were in the closet. When I was a kid, I was afraid somebody was hiding in the closet. I don't know how long this lasted. It might have been like 3 months. And my sister had the same fear that somebody was hiding in the closet. Because one day we opened them and I said, you know, I'm always afraid the closet's open. And she said, I'm always afraid. I mean, we were like 7 years old or something. And when I discovered she was worried about somebody in the closet and I was worried about somebody, the two of us, this is what we said, let's go look in the closet. We were terrified. We were terrified. A 7-year-old kid and a 5-year-old kid are now going to challenge the closet. And I remembered I had a toy with me that I carried because I was going to use it as a weapon in case anybody was there. And we looked in the closet and there was nobody there, and that was the end of our fear. Can you explain this to me? You know? Well, anyway. So worry creates a problem. I could have been afraid of closets for the rest of my life. Actually, I'm always a little uncomfortable when the closet door is open. I got to go call my sister. Okay, worry distracts our attention. You know, worry distracts us from the duties of the present. It grabs our attention from the things of utmost importance. Like, I know a man who sits at home and worries all the time. He worries, he's confused, he's into trying to solve the problems of the universe. He's concerned about mankind and the problems in Polynesia. And he's always actively taking care of something on the planet, but he can't make a buck. He can't pay his rent. And he has to depend on his wife, who keeps him going. It grabs your attention from the things of utmost importance. It interferes with your highest functioning. Worry is an uninvited guest who spoils all the fun, making our shoulders droop, our forehead crease. It really takes a bad toll on relationships with your children. You know, I mean, your kids, if you're a worry wart, your kids have got to grow up like they get, you know, they get battle fatigue. I mean, they get shell shot. So worry doubles our problems. To anticipate future troubles by worrying about them today is to double them. We already have enough troubles today. Today's problems are all are capable of handling. Worrying about tomorrow stacks up the problems that I have tomorrow to deal with, the problems that you've already imagined. Worry diverts our point of life. Life is far more important than material things. So often, our worries... You know, it just reminded me, this is such a pleasant piece. Let me give you a little something in the middle of the day. Hold on a second. Hey.
Oh, I got plenty of nothing. and nothing's plenty for me. I got no car, got no mule, I got no misery. Poor folks with plenty of plenty got a lock on their door. Afraid somebody's going to rob them while they's out making more. What for? I got no lock on the door. That's no way to be. They can steal the rug from the floor. That's okay with me, cause the things that I prize, like the stars in the skies, all are free. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, got my song, got him the whole day long. No use complaining, got my gal, got my Lord.
From Porgy and Bess. Now, of course, it's very easy to say life is a bowl of cherries and I got nothing to worry about. Of course you could say that, especially when you're like me. I mean, it's successful. I got plenty of plenty. But there's something to it. There's something to this concern and worry that just eats away at you. Am I saying you should not be building for the future? Yes. But please examine the motives of your worry. Your worry is not about the present. Your worry is about the past. Your worry is concern is that you're going to lose this love that you're attached to. That has to do with an early childhood family. And it is so clear to me, there is the most worrisome people I know all came from the same kind of families. An overbearing parent and an absent, distant, but nice other parent. So they tried to alienate themselves with this nice parent to protect them against the overbearing parent. Now, what is it about an overbearing parent that's so scary? What's so scary is, as a kid, if you have somebody controlling you all that much and telling you everything you should do and everything you should be, you really lose any sense of yourself. And the felt sense of it is like you are losing your mind. You forget about who you are. You become lost to something else, and you sense it. You can really feel yourself being gobbled up and losing your personality when they tell you to wear that brown jacket that you have to wear to school because you're going to some kind of school that requires brown jackets. And you lose your identity when they tell you to draw paintings like everybody else draws and make sure you do everything like everybody else does, and you do it. You do it because you want that love and attention, but little by little you feel that you're slipping away. And if you're lucky, you wind up having a little piece of ribbon that distinguishes you from everybody else, or a little something. That's what tattoos are all about. They're all about, I want to be me, I'm going to distinguish me, until you find out that tattoos are now part of making you just like everybody else. But this attempt, this desire that we have to be acceptable and yet to maintain our independence, that's a difficult thing. And that's the basis of all this worry. I want to be loved. I want to be cared for. I want to be absolutely adored in some way. I don't want to be, and I have to make sure I protect it. Well, what does it do for you? There's only one other thing I could think of when it comes to worry that's very important, because you worry, you wonder why people, elders, worry so much. Oy vey, right? Why? Why is there so much there? Well, I think the more fragile a person becomes, the more they try to feel power. You know, the more fragile you get over time, as you break down and your body breaks down and you get weak in the bones, the more control you try to exert. But in order to exert the control, you have to feel some kind of power. Worry is at least some use of your brain. Now, of course, you're fighting with yourself all the time, but at least you're using it. Somehow, and I know a lot of people who have done this, retirement, you know, they go into retirement and they got nothing to do. Nothing. So they begin to worry. And they're having a battle with themselves instead of having a battle with their company or where they used to work. So worry is an exercise of power as well. And in a way, of course, it is powerlessness completely, because that person who is worrying all the time is, that person who's worrying all the time is in effect eating themselves up. We yearn for approval and closeness, but at the same time, we're afraid of it. So the worriers are unfortunately most trapped in trying to find some way to get through life. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. I think that there are ways out of it. If you strive, if you have this push-pull for approval, love, and you have this fear of abandonment, you know, and you just stay in it and stay in it and stay in it, and you're going to be, I just have to figure it out. Those are the words that they use. I just have to figure it out. When somebody says, I just got to figure it out, I just got to figure it out, you know they're caught in a trap. Because nobody ever really does figure it out. Nobody says, I've got to just figure it out, and then they go, aha, that's what it is. It never happens. It's like getting advice from your friends. You ask your friends for advice, and they give you advice, and you don't follow the advice. It's not like you ask your friend for advice, and your friend gives you the advice, and you go, aha, I should leave him. Oh, I shouldn't go out with him anymore. Never, it never happened. Well, worrying does the same thing. It doesn't do anything for you. It just keeps it going. I know one person who worries every time her husband goes on a trip. She tracks him. She tracks him by, tracks his air flight. When's he going to arrive? Is he going to arrive safely? Is he going to this? Is he going to that? And she's obsessive about it. She doesn't feel calm until it happens. One would think that maybe she lost some significant male figure in her life at some point, that it may have affected her. One wonders if she was always like this. But her worry does not increase her relationship, but it keeps her connected in her own way. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. That was a one-hour rant. Good, good. We'll be back with you on Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday, we're going to do part two of the caregiver's wife, about caregivers. I was able to get back Dr. Diana Denholm. Do not miss it. It was a terrific program last Tuesday. If you haven't heard it, my friends, go to the website, thepositivemind.com. And, yeah. Hey, a group of people who are putting together a collective on people who want to share office space are being in touch with us around the positive mind. They've been saying, if we could find other people with a positive mind, mostly psychotherapists who are looking to be part of a shared office space, send me an email if you know of anybody who's like looking to share or would like to be a part of a common space of positively minded psychotherapists. Be nice to even be a cleaning person for that. I will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. And do send me an email. Armand@thepositivemind.com. Be back to you next Tuesday.
On April 17th through April 21st, the International